The Holy Gospel according to John, the 13th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Now, before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean." After he had washed their feet, had put on his robe, and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and your teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you should also do as I have done to you. Very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Now, the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. If the idea of washing someone else's feet on Maundy Thursday, or if having your own feet touched by someone else on Maundy Thursday grosses you out, well, then I would say you are on the way to really getting what's going on in the gospel. The kind of love that Jesus is commanding is up close and personal, as up close and personal as washing someone's feet. Now, thankfully, we're worshiping from home this Maundy Thursday, so you get a free pass on actually touching somebody's feet this year. But there are times when I hear this text talked about in our churches as if the people of Jesus' day liked washing one another's feet, as if the action of foot washing was real for them and meant maybe symbolically for us. No way. Foot washing is a nasty job then, maybe grosser, and it's a nasty job now. Sure, it was more common, but it was a job for slaves. If upstanding citizens liked washing feet, then Peter wouldn't have scoffed at Jesus for stooping down and grabbing hold of his feet. I'd say being grossed out is kind of the point. So if you sense some of the intimacy of this, or if you feel uncomfortable by it, and I think you get it. The love of God goes beyond our comfort levels. God's love enters into the cracked, worn out, and tired places, the places we would otherwise rather not go. the places we'd rather not let other people go. It's kind of like this, just an illustration. When I was a kid, I loved flying on airplanes. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved takeoff and landing and going to the airport, and I loved the flight attendants and the peanuts, everything. But then, later, I'd say in my college years, something happened. There was this sort of dramatic shift that happened really quickly, and I began hating airplane rides. No, not hating, despising, dreading, and fearing them. And I tell you, it wasn't a symbolic fear. It was real. It produced bodily effects. And it had been brought on by a series of episodes that happened right after another, right after one another. And they didn't even happen to me. They were secondhand traumas, as we would say. But the effect was the same. Now, I don't want to go into what each of those little things was. That's not important. But what was important is that those episodes brought about this fear of flying that had been totally foreign to me before. And I remember the first time I got on an airplane after these things happened back to back. One of them was a plane crash, and one of them was an emergency landing with a friend. But the first time I got on an airplane right after this had happened, I noticed that my palms were sweaty, and I noticed that I was dizzy and I couldn't breathe. And every time the plane shook during takeoff or a touch of turbulence, I got so nervous I gripped the arms of the seat and I could feel my heart racing. And it went on like this for a long time, many, many plane rides. It just wouldn't stop. And I would try to sit there before going on an airplane ride, something I was having to do all the time. But I'd try to sit there and intellectualize things. I'd try to rationalize things, even in the days right before a flight. I'd say, okay, Marcus, the odds of dying in a crash are much smaller than getting in a car crash. You know, there's over 100,000 flights a day and none of them are crashing. What's the big deal? And over again, I would try to do this. I would rationalize my way out of this fear. Try to tell myself why it was irrational. And maybe it was irrational. But did calling it irrational hope or rationalizing? Nope. My palms kept sweating and I kept getting dizzy. This is not a symbolic foot washing Jesus is doing, as much as that was not a symbolic fear. It was real. I felt it in my body, even when I would think of getting on an airplane. Now, full disclosure, that time of my life, that flight anxiety and fear has totally passed, so you don't need to worry about me. It's not meant to be a story about me. But it's the story of the way that these vulnerabilities, these cracks, these fears appear in our lives just as we're moving through the world. We are people susceptible to trauma and disease and death. The cracks and vulnerabilities are not things that we can rationalize away or even wish away. The cracks in our feet develop over the course of long journeys. They get tired, our feet, and worn out in ways that we can't predict. That's the human condition. We're vulnerable. I'm guessing that many of us, most of us, are experiencing something like that right now with COVID-19. And that looking at the news every day, I don't know about you, but I look at the news, I even hit reload, looking for some kind of piece of information, some rationality that will help me dig into some kind of hope, something to make my palms stop sweating, so to speak. But there's no information that's come. And I have a feeling that for many of us, this episode is going to leave a deep imprint on the way we move through the world. When Jesus stoops over a bowl of water, we witness God's answer to that fear, the fear that we feel in our bodies, even though we know the facts. It's not an intellectual activity or a representational thing he's doing. This is balm for a hurting worn out feet. This is the love of God. And for those of us who would rather keep our socks on, for those of us who would rather not admit our vulnerabilities, the songwriter Leonard Cohen reminds us there is a crack in everything. We can't escape the fact that we're vulnerable. But Cohen goes on to sing, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And that's just what we see tonight. The love of God gets into us precisely in those cracks where we would rather keep those things hidden, those stories of our fear. Love reaches in through those places that are tired and worn down and sometimes too gross to even look at with the balm of love and says, here, have a bath. Here is life. I get to see this about every Sunday when we gather together as a church. When we get the benefit of gathering together, sometimes it's even easier to see it. One of my favorite stories of my time here at Shepherd of the Valley was when I was interviewing to become the pastor. I was interviewing with the council. And I asked them, we were asking one another a series of questions, and I asked them a difficult question. I said, if Shepherd of the Valley closed its doors tomorrow, who would miss it? And I think the council was a little bit shocked by the question. But I got a few answers. And then our treasurer, Lori, chimed in. And she said, my brother would miss it. And I didn't know Lori's brother, Michael, and I didn't know Michael at all, or Lori very well. I said, well, so tell me why. And Lori said, because everyone at Shepherd of the Valley holds hands during the Lord's Prayer. And Sunday morning is one of the only times when a person other than a caregiver or a family member actually touches my brother, Michael, who's in a wheelchair. He'd miss Shepherd of the Valley if we closed our doors. He loves being with everyone and holding hands. That's what God's love does tonight. It builds us up. It reaches into us through those longings and fears with life and healing. That's the life that we're talking about tonight. Jesus doesn't come to us through an academic exercise or an abstract idea. For Michael, Jesus comes every Sunday in the form of your hands, the people of Shepherd of the Valley. There is nothing abstract or representational about those hands. I have to say, as I'm sitting here, that question that I asked the council is coming back to haunt me a little bit because the doors are closed. Our preschool can't meet, our teachers can't see one another, our members can't gather, our doors are locked. And just about all of us, Michael included, miss gathering. I hear that just about every day. But I have to wonder whether here and now, not symbolically, not in some distant place, but whether here and now God is up to something in this crack, in the middle of this place, in the middle of this trauma that we are all experiencing. If God isn't up to something as outlandish as wrapping a towel around a waist and getting to work on a bunch of old, stinky, worn-out feet. If COVID-19 has taught us anything, it's that we're all vulnerable. Vulnerable to disease and death, vulnerable to grief, vulnerable to loss, vulnerable to fear. And if you're like me, maybe you want to keep your socks on. But for the first time in years, maybe in the first time of many of our lives, this Maundy Thursday, we can't hide our vulnerabilities under our shoes and socks. We can't politely decline to show the world that we're just too vulnerable. But maybe, just maybe, this is how the light, how the love of God gets in. Thanks be to God. Amen.